The House Committee on Transportation and Economic Development will come to order. Welcome, large gallery. Glad you're here. We colleagues have two bills. We'll open a work session on SB 133. Zach.
Senate Bill 133 exempts personal planning for restricted motorcycle endorsement to operate a motorcycle with more than two wheels from requirement to take motorcycle rider education course, and we have the Dash 2 amendment in front of us.
And do we have someone here to explain to us what it does?
Troy.
Didn't do him any good to sit clear in the back.
Or Amy.
Let's see how fast we can get Amy up here, Troy. What do you have to say?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, my name is Troy Casales, Administrator of the Transportation Safety Division for the Oregon Department of Transportation. The Dash 2 Amendment is in relationship to the National Association of DMVs. Is currently conducting two or three work groups related to different styles and types of vehicles, which includes the three-wheel motorcycles. And instead of trying to figure out something at the state level, doing our own study and research, what this amendment looks to be proposing is use that national work group, because it's something that's of national significance. And when they come out with their findings, then expect the department within 60 days to come to you with an assessment of that report and how it would fit within Oregon law for endorsements and registrations, et cetera, related to these three-wheel vehicles.
Yes, Co-Chair Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for coming, Troy, for the explanation. Do you have a sense of when that national group might be forthcoming with a report, or any idea about when they would decide they ought to undertake such an effort?
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Reed. They've been working on it for a couple of years now, and this is something nationally, the growth of these vehicles and all kinds of different styles and types. All across the nation, they're hoping this work group gets done sooner than later, because all states are dealing with the exact same type of issue. A timeline on it, I've not heard from the work group if they have a sunset date or a date they have to report by. They're continuing just to wrestle with the whole gamut, and it seems like every little bit of time there's a new vehicle on the stock, you know, that comes up that they've got to figure out how it goes into the fold and how the manufacturing standards have to be created.
So we think it's sometime in the current calendar year, 2 years, any kind of sense?
Mr. Co-Chair Reed, I would say within 24 months would be a total guess on my part, simply just because of the significance across the country.
And something in between a question and a comment, Mr. Chair, if I might. I think part of, at least for me, what was behind the request for this sort of an amendment is the idea that we'd like to know, or the legislature, I'd like the legislature to know when the threshold is reached in terms of these vehicles being a significant presence for Oregon. So I can imagine that this summary or this report will have some thoughts about it, but then I just want to make it clear, at least for myself, that in the assessment that's contemplated here, I would like to see the department's recommendations about or thoughts about what the number of vehicles in Oregon would be, at which point we ought to be thinking about specific training and other approaches.
Mr. Chair. Further questions? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess to follow on to his, because I'm not really, I was reading through it, and I wasn't really sure it asked you to report on the volume, but you have a way to track as you register these vehicles, whether they're two-wheel, three-wheel, four-wheel vehicles.
Mr. Co-Chair and Representative, I cannot answer that. I'd have to ask
Amy
or someone from the DMV side. I know there are different variations of motorcycle registrations. I just don't know if this is definitive enough in Oregon or not.
Co-chairs and Representative Beyer, I apologize. Could you repeat the question for me, please?
Are you tracking the number of two-wheel, three-wheel, and four-wheel vehicles? So if we were wanting to know how many three-wheel vehicles are out there, we would know?
Co-chairs and Representative Beyer, I believe
Amy,
the answer to that...
Amy, for the record, your name.
Thank you very much, Co-Chair. Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation. So I think the answer to that is no, and the reason is that all of these vehicles are registered as a motorcycle. Folks who get a registration or a license endorsement for motorcycle riding can get one of two kinds. One is just a standard motorcycle license endorsement, meaning that they tested on a what we would consider a normal two-wheel motorcycle, and then they can ride any of those, three-wheel, two-wheel, what have you. Folks who come in and test on a three-wheel motorcycle are limited to being legally endorsed to operate only that three-wheeled motorcycle. But plenty of folks, our understanding is that plenty of folks who are endorsed for a full motorcycle endorsement ride a three-wheel, and particularly folks who maybe rode a two-wheel for years and then as they age or decide they're better off, they move to a three-wheel. So I don't think we do know how many folks are riding these things.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So now here comes the fiscal question. What would it take for you to be able to figure out how many three wheels we have versus two wheels, which this bill is kind of based on that a little bit, that until we have a mass of three wheels, we won't.
Mr. Co-Chair and Representative Byer, the underlying structure of the registration is going to be based on what's defined in statute. And so while this particular bill is related to endorsements, so therefore the amendment has to touch the endorsement piece to stay in the relating area. One of the things that this report would do would be recommending to all the DMVs for all of North America that here's the way to potentially structure. And so what I'm reading this amendment to be is the touch point of the endorsement. So as it relates to the endorsement law, come back with a report and summarize what's in that national report and do the full spectrum, particularly endorsements. But look at all of what's there. It would be hard to pre-calculate what it might take because we're not sure what the National Association is going to say, how to split it or how to carve it out. Because there are different styles of three-wheel. There's the open ones. There are the ones that for meter readers that are enclosed. There's the new style with two in the front. It's hard to predict how thin we're going to make that count.
Okay.
Without knowing the report.
No, thank you.
Representative Weider.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I thought we outlawed three-wheelers. The sale of three-wheelers.
Ms. Sherritt and Representative Weider, I think relating to the off-road ATVs,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, that done, I think, at a national level through Congress. This is talking about the on-road three-wheel vehicles.
So, if I may follow up.
I'll follow up.
Because I understand what we're trying to do here, but I'm just wondering why they're safe on-road, but they're not safe off-road.
Mr. Chair and Representative Widener, the on-road vehicles have certain safety elements that they have to have in the manufacturing in order for them to be able to be recognized as an on-road vehicle, whereas the off-road, different terrain, different the issue there of the unlevel ground and the tipping was what the big issue was, if I remember correctly, for the three-wheeled ATVs off-road was the stability, whereas on-road you're unlikely to encounter the type of terrain. But there's standards that they have to meet as manufacturers for the vehicles on-road.
So would this probably open up the door for them to be used off-road again? You're looking at somebody owned in three-wheeler, multiple of them. Three-wheelers.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, so I don't know. I wouldn't be able to answer that off-road question.
I'm just trying to figure out, if I may, Mr. Chair, why all of a sudden they're safe for on-road when they're not safe off-road. I mean, it's kind of like I'm trying to figure out what we're doing or what even the feds are doing by saying, okay, they're illegal, but now they're legal on the streets.
You know, actually, Representative Widener, I think the issue you raised for me is one of the safety of the device and whether or not the state is doing an adequate job of making sure those operating these on-road three-wheelers are capable of keeping not only themselves safe but everybody else. I guess that is the question, isn't it? Is that which we are now demanding of those who operate a three-wheeler sufficient while we wait for this study? I think I asked this question before. I think you gave me the answer, but I guess better hear it again.
Mr. Chair, individuals that would like to be licensed solely to operate a three-wheel vehicle can go through and test on that three-wheel vehicle, but it also does not preclude them from being taken through the training on the two-wheel and being licensed for two- and three-wheel. There's only 20 to 30 per year individuals that are wanting to get the three-wheel endorsement and endorsement only, which means the majority of the three-wheel riders that you see out and about the state have a standard motorcycle endorsement that lets them operate two- or three-wheel vehicles.
And to go back to the minority, those folks have what?
The
20 or 30 that don't obtain the two-wheel endorsement.
Mr. Chair, they've gone to DMV and have done the knowledge test and have done an on-cycle test operating their three-wheel vehicle through the course at the local DMV site.
Further questions? Yes, Reverend Smith.
Thanks. So I understand the argument that three-wheeled training might be different or would be different than two-wheel training. There's certain things that you'd want to learn, need to learn on a two-wheel vehicle, but wouldn't be particularly helpful to learn on a three-wheel vehicle and vice versa. What I don't yet feel that I have a comfortable with my own understanding about is, are there things that in your motorcycle training to get your two- or three-wheel that we actually don't want three-wheel vehicle owners to know? Or is it just for those 30 or 40, it's kind of a hassle and it's really not useful? I guess the thing, the nub of it for me is it still useful to have motorcycle training in operating a two-wheeled vehicle? I mean, I assume there's like extraneous stuff, but even if what it does is give you a little more warning and say, here's the kind of thing you don't want to do if you're driving a car that you do need to do if you're driving anything that doesn't have a wall around you. It seems like there would be some overlap. I've tried to G-chat my resident motorcycle expert, but we'll see.
Good afternoon. I'm Steve Garrett. I'm the director of the Team Oregon Motorcycle Safety Program. There are quite a number of differences between three-wheelers and two-wheelers, and it depends upon the configuration of the three-wheelers. There have been sidecars in place for years. There are three-wheelers with two wheels in the back. There are three-wheelers with two wheels in the front. They all handle a little bit differently, and they handle completely differently from a motorcycle. Mm-hmm. So from the strategic point of view of understanding what the clues are in the road that you should be looking for, riding a motorcycle will apply to actually any kind of a vehicle that you choose to drive. But the handling characteristics of the vehicle are completely different.
Follow, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
So I guess I apologize, I'm still grasping. I think it totally makes sense for us to get a report and to have, if there's a whole bunch of three-wheel vehicles, to have to consider having specific three-wheel training. I think that makes a lot of sense if we get to the scale that it makes sense, right? I think that's a legitimate conversation. It seems to me, though, that the bill, as I understand it, is very different than that, that wouldn't obviate the possibility of doing that, but all it really does is say, well, if you just want the three-wheel vehicle, you can go get your two tests, and you don't need to do the training. I guess I'm still struggling with why that, for those 30, 40 people, is it costing you guys money? I mean, why is that such a good idea?
Representative Smith, the issue is we have in the Team Oregon program 200 instructors who are trained in two-wheel training, and we provide that on a statewide basis.
Mm-hmm.
We run about 800 courses a year in two-wheel, and we train 10,000 students a year. What this will require if we're to do three-wheeler also is to implement a program on a statewide basis to train people in three-wheelers, which means we need to have a range or have some kind of a training tool because they do handle differently, and we have to train the instructor mix to do that as well. And the numbers that are out there, the demand for the three-wheel training is so small that it's a very big expense for a very few number of people.
Sounded like somebody else wanted to follow up, but that gave me a follow-up question if somebody else wasn't going to.
Co-chairs and Representative Smith, the other point is perhaps the flip side of the coin that you were talking about. The law as it is today, based on the changes that were made, I believe, last session, requiring in a staggered fashion folks to take the training for motorcycles, and then they don't need to take the test at DMV. You just take the training, you pass it, you take that certificate to DMV, and now you get your motorcycle endorsement.
Uh-huh.
So if you have these three-wheeled folks who are currently under that law taking a training on a two-wheel bike,
mm-hmm.
that according to the expert doesn't really match up with their reality, and now they take that certificate to DMV and say, look, I got my training done, now I get my license, having no demonstration that they know anything about how to drive this vehicle.
Boom, shakalaka, you got my vote. Thanks.
Thank you, sir.
Further questions? I just have one last question. I know I ask it again, but I'm not sure I'm actually hearing it, because I think Representative Smith got close to it again. And the question is, are we simply waiting for there to be more of them, more three-wheelers, so that we can do a better job training them? And in the interim, those that just have the 20 or 30 universe are getting by without adequate training, or I got to hear this. What we're doing now is adequate. Or is it something we're doing because we can't raise the fee high enough to pay for what they really should be taught or should demonstrate, excuse me?
Mr. Chair, two parts to the question. First, are we waiting so the volume of individuals that are looking to be three-wheel endorsed and three-wheel only increases to be able to equate to the cost of the training? Yes. The second part is individuals that are operating three-wheel, majority of them have gone through the DMV test and the on-cycle performance, or have gone through training because they have their base motorcycle endorsement, and it is just a very small audience right now that would be able to go on the three-wheel, do the test, the three-wheel on cycle at DMV, and get a limited three-wheel endorsement from DMV.
And the proper question is, those that are in this small universe that don't have the two-wheel but want the three, should they be receiving more training? Should we be allocating more money to that? And if we're not, is it because we simply said, gee, there's only 20 of them, why worry? Or is it because we've said they don't need the training?
Mr. Chair, it's the fact that the volume of the individuals compared to the cost of being able to provide the devices, the range, et cetera, and the training for those individuals at this point in time would be a huge cost compared to the small amount of audience that would come forward.
And the competency they now have to demonstrate is that which is required when they go down to the DMV and drive through whatever is set up, the cones or whatever they're set up. They have to not fall off, or they have to be able to not knock them all over. I'm not clear on the standard, but apparently there's some sort of something they need to do that establishes some minimum competency. Is that what happens? And for them to get their current whatever they get, what is it they get? Endorsement.
Chair Benz, right. It's for the folks who test on a three-wheel, it's called a motorcycle endorsement with a J restriction. That's what it is in DMV lingo. That's what they get. And correct, they have to come and take their test and demonstrate competence. Similar to, you'll recall House Bill 2140 earlier with teen drivers. Today they have to take some either driver's ed and practice or lots of practice, and then they show up and take their test they pass or they fail.
Last question. It still is, quote, a motorcycle, apparently for purposes of a helmet. Can these people ride these without a helmet, or must they wear a helmet?
Mr. Chair, the three-wheel vehicles that are not enclosed have a helmet requirement. If the three-wheel vehicle is enclosed, has a cab structure, then they're required to wear a safety belt.
Yeah. Further questions?
Did you have?
I just want to know why we can't have three-wheelers legal off-road again.
Thank you very much.
I do have a question. Do you anticipate that after all these studies are done, that they could come back and say, we don't really think these people need any additional training? Do you think that could be an outcome, or do you think that's probably a long shot, or...
Mr. Chair and Representative Beyer, that is a possibility that the study could come back and talk about the fact that these vehicles are out there and the operators already have an automobile license to begin with, and the endorsement is an add on top of that. It's hard to predict where that group may go, but there is an underlying, is that anybody operating a motorcycle has already, for the most part, they have their Class C minimum operator's license. This is an add on, an endorsement beyond. And As Mr. Garrett's talked about, the different configurations of these devices is what's going to make it difficult because they all have different handling and different dynamics about the vehicle itself.
Actually, that does prompt me to go to the very essence of the bill. The thought is that you would exempt the three-wheel vehicles because to leave them in is to make them, A, motorcycles, which are not, and, B, impose a cost upon those who are obtaining the motorcycle, the two-wheel license, to pick up the cost for those driving the three.
That's correct, Mr.
Chair. So the thought, so that is the reason for the bill.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Further questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Colleagues, we have the dash twos in front of us.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Move the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 133, dated May 19th, 2011.
Co-chair, we just moved the dash two amendments, dated, is it 519?
Yes.
2011, to SB 133. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, the dash two amendments are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 133 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Co-Chair Reed has moved Senate Bill 133 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Seeing
no,
none is,
there's not.
There's no discussion.
What's that? I actually might have some discussion now. My vote was got it. Boom, chuckalucka. If John's has worked into it, then it's a good bill.
Is there objection to adoption of 133 as amended? Seeing none, Senate Bill 133 as amended is adopted. Who would like to carry this bill? Do I see anyone leaping forward to carry
Representative Lindsay.
I don't think he looks too
I will leap forward
you
to
will.
Accept that assignment.
And
but I'll do it privately.
Thank you. It will be carried by Representative Lindsay. Thank you very much, Representative Lindsay. With that, I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 133. And I am going to open the work session on Senate Bill 179. Zach.
Senate Bill 179 authorizes the Director of the Travel Information Council and any designated persons to issue citations for violations of health and safety rules in rest areas. Rest areas managed by the council.
And we do we have, Zach, any amendments or anything?
There are no
else?
Amendments.
No amendments.
No amendments off the.
And I see we have someone waiting anxiously to come forward. But I'm not sure I see anyone anxious to talk to him.
Yes,
Representative, Co-Chair Reed.
Thank you. I move Senate Bill 179 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Co-Chair Reed has moved Senate Bill 179 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion?
Mr. Chair, we do have an hour and a half to grill the individual on the back of why he wants to find these poor people that can't find the garbage cans and things like that. But with that, I'm good with the bill and we can go forward.
Is there further discussion? Is there objection? No objection. With that, Senate Bill 179 is passed. Is there a carrier? Nobody looks.
Co-Chair Byer
is going to carry. And with that, thank you very much, Co-Chair Byer. I will close the work session on Senate Bill 179. Zach, do we have anything further on our agenda?
Aside from current promotions? No.
Before everyone leaves and before we adjourn, Wednesday we have the access bill, the public records work session, and the billboards work session. Zach, is that it for our Wednesday hearing?
That is it. If members of the committee would bring in ideas for interim committees, that would be very helpful.
And do we need to notice up the fact that we'll be discussing interim committees, or is it enough that people bring it in?
Just have people bring it in.
Okay, thank you.
We discuss if we have time.
All right. With that, we are adjourned.
Before you leave, I have a question.